Kevin Clark, welcome to the show. I feel like, can I wish you a happy new year? Like, where are you standing on this? It's January 3rd as we're recording this. The show comes out on January 4th. Am I violating the rule? Can I say happy new year to you?
I think you can. By Larry David standards, you cannot. But if we're going to live our entire lives by Larry David standards, we're going to have a tough time. So I'm good with it. I have a long grace period.
Good. Well, then happy new year, brother.
Same to you, man. Excited to this is I never have like a relaxed new year because I'm always gearing up for the NFL playoffs. So I'm excited to sit here and chop it up with you.
Yeah, it's going to be very relaxing. I do have to, if we're going to look forward to the new year, we're going to have to talk a little bit of the things that transpired last year. Namely, you know, we're around the Horn Buddies now.
Of course.
And we have to talk about your incredible streak of declaring teams being the best and going not so great for about 4 or 5 weeks. There was the Cowboys situation there. Like, how did that go?
Well, before I was even on Around the Horn, prehistoric history, I picked the Bengals to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, that got off track because of the calf injury and then the hand injury. So, like, that's a mulligan for me.
Okay.
But from there, I think the Cowboys were the first team I said were the best team in football. The Niners, the Dolphins were in the mix there after the 70-point game. I said the Lions were the best team in the NFC temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very heavy as the head that wears the crown situation. Like, as soon as somebody was crowned by me, they were immediately knocked off. It was rough. But I think that speaks to the lack of dominant teams this year, complete teams, and that I'm never wrong just early, David.
You know, I want to commend you on that, but I also want to note that the following week after your predictions fell apart, yours truly said that the Ravens were the best team in the AFC after they beat the Lions. So, you know, stick with me, buddy. I'll help you with some of these NFL takes. Yeah,
you were able to tail me. Like, I was the pioneer there, and you were able to come in. I was like the lead blocker on the play because I hyped up the Lions, and then that allowed the Ravens to win that Sunday, and then you were able to follow in the coattails. So I think we're working together. Teamwork makes the dream work, David.
Regular season finale of America's favorite TV show is here as the NFL steps into week 18 and all of our freezing cold takes have been exposed. A few questions still remain ahead of the playoffs, and then there'll be a whole offseason of intrigue to examine after the Super Bowl. So today, Kevin Clark, the host of This Is Football, tells us what he's looking at in this final week and what's to come in the postseason. I'm David Dennis Jr. It's Thursday, January 4th. This is ESPN Daily.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible you can't even connect. These type of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, Kevin. Let's break out the notebook or the, I don't know what you got, the iPhone, the Android, the BlackBerry, if you're like Drake.
Yeah, there you go. It is not a BlackBerry. I just have a Google Doc listed by week. So this is the week of January 1st, and I just dump every single thing I learn in there. So it is not a notebook. I wish it was a notebook. I'm an old school guy, but it is unfortunately a Google document.
All right, let's empty out the Google Doc for the next little bit of time before we get into Week 18 and then talk the playoffs, of course. But I want to start with the elephant in the room with the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk about the referees. So we saw Brad Allen's crew totally blow the end of the Lions-Cowboys game last week. And that same crew is now somehow going to officiate the nationally televised Steelers-Ravens game this coming weekend. So we're going to open the floor here. What's going on here, and are we going to see the Steelers get some help or something backing into the playoffs?
If you're asking about the officiating, we can start there. The games are not rigged. The NFL is really good at everything, including officiating. And if they were trying to rig the games, especially for the Cowboys would have won a hell of a lot more over the past three decades. The Cowboys, if you haven't noticed, do not win Super Bowls, don't even make Super Bowls. The fact that the NFL is able to generate a compelling TV product with national teams from the Midwest, from the West Coast, trust me, they do not need to get any assistance from the referees. I think what you're seeing there is incompetence, not conspiracy, specifically with Brad Allen. Now, I think people are talking about NFL referees like they're not the best in the world. They are the best in the world. And that's what's scary. This might be an unrefable game in some ways. I've talked to refs in the past about this, whether or not it just become too fast, too complicated. Do they need an eye in the sky? That wouldn't have helped with the Detroit game. Do they need someone kind of overlooking them saying, hey, you totally missed this insane pass interference call. It's all Troy Aikman's talking about, that kind of thing. I think that would help. But I do think that maybe there's too many rules, too many exceptions to rules. I've talked to referees about that in the past as well. It's a very complicated sport. And I think what we were seeing, and I saw the phrase a couple times on Twitter on Saturday night, was Brad Allen was on autopilot. He was not locked in to what was happening in front of him. That's a skill issue. I don't think there's a crisis in the structure of officiating because of that. There might be some other symptoms of that. But I think that was a referee who's made a lot of high profile mistakes making another one. I'm baffled that they would put him in another national televised game a week later. Putting him in that situation, David, it almost seems like you better get yourself out of this. You better call a clean game with no mistakes, because if he has another game where we come out of it, and league office hates when the referees are the story, because they, like, think about how often they give us a compelling product with the quarterbacks, with the coaches, with the personalities. Normally there's something to talk about that's not the referees. They hate when the referees are the story. The referees had to be the story coming out of Saturday night. If that happens again in a national TV game, I don't like Brad Allen's future employment prospects. How about that?
Okay, so even if there is no ill intent or corruption or script or rigged situation going on here, how does the league make sure that these kinds of issues don't negatively impact a playoff game?
Prayer? No, I mean, like, there's a reason a lot of league commissioners have said this joke before, that they root for the refs. And I really do, especially in big games. And I really do believe that's the case. I think, frankly, it's a double-edged sword, because the best way for this kind of stuff to be alleviated, integrity questions, all that stuff, is to make referees available after the game to the broader media, not just pool reports. And we saw that with Brad Allen a couple nights ago, where Brad Allen just kind of said, well, don't know what to tell you. Lions didn't declare, not my problem. And that made everybody angrier. I think the way to do that would be to have them in a press conference setting. But as I just said, they don't want the conversation to be about the refs. And that would only heighten, if you had Brad Allen's press conference after the game on SportsCenter and on Snapchat and on Instagram, and we're scrolling through and we see different clips and people are taking little videos and saying, oh my God, I can't believe he said that, he contradicted himself here. That's going to only draw more attention. So that's why they wouldn't do it. So it's a very hard needle to thread, frankly. How do they make sure that they don't have a playoff game like this? You only give the legitimately best crews playoff games. And we've already seen the Schefter report that it seems like Allen's crew will not work a playoff game. I think you have the best crews, more cohesive crews that understand the flow of the game. You know this, man. Like, one playoff game can determine a legacy of a town, let alone a player and a coach and an owner. Like, one playoff game can determine everything, and one call in that determines everything. And not everybody's New England, where they were playing three playoff games, four playoff games a year for 20 years. Sometimes it's the only chance you got. That's my number one thing when you get to these kind of stakes.
All right, so we're going to move on from the script, from the referees, from all that stuff, and talk about actual football, man. Let's talk about the biggest game in week 18. It's the matchup between the Dolphins and the Bills. Winner takes the AFC East. Buffalo's been, you know, succeeding lately in spite of not always looking that great. Miami was just embarrassed, smacked down by the Ravens. And they lost Bradley Chubb to injury. What are you looking at in this game?
Josh Allen is putting the team on his back. And it's funny, because I've always worried. Remember the Bills telling me this a couple years ago, their GM Brandon Bean, that he makes mistakes when he's trying to do too much. I think he looked around and said, you know what? I have to do too much. And for right now, it's working. Earlier in the season, it wasn't. But right now, he's the first quarterback in the Super Bowl era to have 8 rush touchdowns in a 5-game span. That's special stuff.
Wow.
And you start to see, I'm a big believer in the concept of playing your best football in December. And I don't think the Bills are doing that necessarily. I mean, they are compared to when they had Ken Dorsey and they were on their way to getting their OC fired. But I think that what that means, there's no magic pixie dust you take on November 28th and say, okay, now I'm going to play my best football in December. It doesn't happen like that. What you do is you add elements to your team and you have health. And I think James Cook a couple weeks ago was a great example of, okay, now we can have these quick outlet passes. I think James Cook's target rate doubled out of the backfield, which is a really good sort of medium range option for easy first downs for Josh Allen, that sort of thing. Josh Allen understanding his limits at this point in the season. Joe Brady understanding the tactics that he needs. I think on the other side, I love this Dolphins team. And there was a point where I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl, but you start to, what's the threshold for you not being the same team anymore? Not to bring the FSU argument into it with the playoffs, but they lose Bradley Chubb, who I believe was leading them in pressures. Before that, Jalen Phillips, who was an absolute beast coming off the edge. That's two pass rushers on a unit that needs pass rush and had pass rush and had genuine pass rush depth. And so at some point, you fall out of the elite just because of that. Xavien Howard was banged up last week as well. We'll see what the extent of that injury is. Jalen Ramsey obviously missed the first part of the season, but is healthy now. If they're down 2 pass rushers, and they will be in the playoffs, at some point, I just don't know how they have the ability to hang with a Baltimore. I would question their ability to hang with, you know, even a team like Cleveland that seems to be getting more and more complete. I love Mike McDaniel. I love this team. I just value pass rush so much that when you lose 2 from a really good unit, I just say, okay, what is the ceiling here? Because it's not what it was a month ago.
So yeah, if you mentioned, if Miami's, you know, has this Browns team and all these teams that get by, and if they do that, Miami or Buffalo, it seems like both of these teams are going to have to get past the Baltimore Ravens eventually if they want to make it to the Super Bowl, right? And I'm still stuck on the fact that a large swath of teams in the offseason, as soon as Lamar Jackson said that he was available, you know, they were like, nah, we're good. And they did it pretty quickly. Like, I think about Arthur Blank and the Falcons and how fast he said, nah, we're good, right?
Yeah.
Now this guy is going to win his second MVP award. So my question is, has this season, like, totally shifted the narrative around Jackson at quarterback, or do we still need to wait and see how he does in the playoffs?
I think, painting with broad strokes, we need to see the playoffs, but the narrative shouldn't have changed much. Lamar Jackson has always been this guy. Lamar Jackson is amazing and can do things at his peak. And it's funny, I was looking at some numbers over the weekend, and the Ravens are destroying really good teams.
Right.
And the stats he's putting up, perfect pass rating and 4 touchdowns, the last time that someone did that was Lamar Jackson. And before that, so he did it on Sunday. And then before that, the last time someone did it was Lamar Jackson. And before that, the last time somebody did that was Lamar Jackson. And we're going back 4 years now.
All right.
And my argument that I've started to realize when you look at numbers like that and you watch this tape is that I think Mahomes at his peak is unstoppable. But I think if you're ranking, and I know that most unstoppable is a contradiction, because if you're unstoppable, you're totally unstoppable. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that Mahomes at his peak is the number one hardest player to defend, but I think Lamar Jackson is number 2. And I think that's kind of always been the case the last 4 years. And so I just think that Lamar should have had a massive bidding war. Mm. And I cannot believe that a team like the Panthers would overpay in draft capital for Bryce Young and not investigate Lamar Jackson and just say, what would this take? And so it's almost a symptom, David, of something different, where it's like, if you didn't pursue Lamar Jackson, you didn't have a quarterback, you're probably on your way to getting fired anyway because you don't know ball.
Right.
And so it's almost like a chicken and egg thing. Mm-hmm. Did you not pursue Lamar Jackson and that's why you're going to get fired? Or are you going to get fired because you didn't pursue Lamar Jackson, which is a symptom of something larger, which is you don't understand how to win football games?
Yeah, so the last time you were on the show, your wish for the new year was no more backup quarterbacks. That's been one of the more disappointing trends of the league this season. And we figured to see a number of these guys in important spots in Week 18 and in the playoffs. I'm thinking Joe Flacco, Gardner Minshew, maybe even a Mason Rudolph appearance here or there.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the January football narrative is going to be impacted by backup quarterbacks?
Well, there's a statue in Philadelphia of Nick Foles. So that's all you need to know. We know what the baseline is to be immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to watch Gardner Minshew in the playoffs? 9 times out of 10, no. But sometimes you get the miracle. You get the Nick Foles run and the entire narrative changes, as he said. And so Joe Flacco right now is writing one of the best stories in sports. And I don't think he won the Super Bowl or anything. But what they're doing is, and it's not a million miles. Obviously, Flacco is significantly better in his career than Nick Foles, but it's not a million miles from what the Eagles do with Foles, which is figure out the couple of things he does well, know that Flacco can't really move, go play action, not make mistakes, and then rely on the defense. And so what I like is NFL teams who understand how to get the most out of their backup and knowing that don't be defeatist and say this season is over. Some of the best stories, Kurt Warner, Nick Foles, are backup quarterback stories. And I love what this Joe Flacco story says about the Browns.
Not in the feel-good backup story is Zach Wilson, but I think we should leave that there.
Oh, God. Haven't Jets fans suffered enough? We don't need to do a Zach Wilson segment.
Well, we're going to pile on the Jets just a little bit because I want to get a little bit more on your read.
I love that.
On what's different with Flacco this year.
Because,
you mentioned that Browns defense is part a big part of that solution. But when you watch him with the Jets, man, he could not throw a forward pass. And now he's airing the ball all over the place. What is different with him, just his mechanics and what you're seeing with him this year?
Well, first of all, it looks like he's a little healthier, and it looks like he's maybe that time off was beneficial in some way to just get him. He couldn't run. Like, I don't mean he couldn't run past the line of scrimmage. I mean he couldn't move in the pocket. Mm-hmm. He would just be back there, and if there was any sort of pass rush, he would just go down with the Jets. So I think it's that. I think it's the play calling. He's leading the NFL. Flacco is in play action on his dropbacks about 33%. I think he's leading the league in yards in that time period that he's been playing. Kevin Stefanski knows how to maximize a quarterback like Joe Flacco. And I think we're seeing a little more creativity. And I don't like it. It's really, if you're going to ask me why guys look worse with the Jets, I think we might be here all day. But I think this is just another symptom of the surrounding and the infrastructure being better somewhere else. And by the way, if you're a Jets fan, it should be very, very worrying that better place is Cleveland, which has not normally been a better place.
All right. Some Jets talk to end the segment as their year comes to an end. More with Kevin Clark after the break.
Ah, fall Saturdays. The air is crisp, the game is on. Your friends are here, and you're outside on grill duty. The Home Depot knows missing the game is not an option. Thankfully, the Traeger Timberline XL Grill is here to help you play defense and make the most of every Saturday. First up, we've got fans to feed, and the Timberline XL is a real crowd pleaser. It can bake, smoke, sear, fry, and saute, so you can feed everyone at the watch party. Whether you want sweet, tangy ribs, jalapeno poppers with a smoky kick, grilled street corn, or some classic buffalo wings, this utility player can do it all. And with the Wi-Fi tech and the Traeger app, you can monitor your smoker temp, meat probes, and pellet levels all from the comfort of your couch so you can watch the game, not the grill, and never miss a moment. Defend your game time with Traeger and the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Traveling to see your fave sports team is cool. But traveling with Amex Platinum for the big game is even better.
Right this way.
With access to dedicated card member entrances at select events, you can skip the line.
And one.
And with access to the Centurion Lounge,
he shoots a three.
You can catch the next game on the way home. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex. Card member entrance access not limited to Amex Platinum card.
All right, Kevin, playoffs are coming up, and we'll know where all the chips fall soon. But I want to hit on a few threads that are about to go to the back burner, starting with the Chicago Bears. They have the number one pick in the upcoming draft. There are at least two quarterbacks that seem to be franchise changers. There's Caleb Williams. There's Drake May. The only trouble is that the guy the Bears took a few years ago, Justin Fields, is starting to actually look pretty good. So what's going to happen at Soldier Field?
I think it's a more complicated question than people think. I've heard people say, okay, clear as day, you take Caleb Williams. Nick Wright was on my show today, and he said literally it wasn't even a question. Then there's a lot of Bears fans who say Justin Fields is him. Let's build around him, get a bunch of skill guys in the draft, get better tackles, and let's ride. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think the problem, David, is that you've already fleeced the most desperate team in football last year. That was the Carolina Panthers. And I don't know who's desperate enough for that right now, especially after the disaster that ensued in Carolina when the Panthers did that and then got the wrong guy. For now, we'll see what happens in 5 years, but it's pretty clear that CJ Stroud is the best quarterback in that draft.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you auction off that pick, how valuable it's going to be. So you might end up getting more value and bang for your buck when you consider you'd have to sign Justin Fields to an extension at some point. But if you can get a second round pick for Justin Fields and then still use those picks, the mid-round pick they'll have this year, still use those picks to get a skill guy, upgrade the offensive line, that sort of thing. What I would do is the first thing I would do is auction off the pick as soon as the Super Bowl ends. Auction off the pick, say, does anybody want to get desperate? And if they do, take it. If they don't, find value somewhere else. The one thing you don't want to do is give up Caleb Williams and not get value for it.
So what's the market for either of those? If you're moving Justin Fields,
yeah,
who's taking him, and or who's being, you know, desperate enough to move up for the Caleb Williams? Where's the best bang for the buck for Chicago?
I mean, I just don't know who's going to sell their future for a player. Even though Caleb Williams is a, I know we say generational now, even though we say it five times per generation, he's a special prospect we've been talking about for a long time. Does New England get desperate with a new era? Do the Giants get desperate? Does Tennessee get desperate? The Jets probably should be in the mix, but they won't be because Rodgers is coming back next year. Atlanta, do they get in the mix? Or does a team say, you know what, the better value is to trade our second round pick for Justin Fields and try to develop that way? I don't know. That's why I said I think there's a lot of doubt over how desperate a team will get. And I think the most important thing is making sure whatever you do, you're maximizing that first overall pick, whether that's Williams or three first round picks or just fleecing a team. My concern is there will not be enough absolutely desperate teams because you already fleeced the most desperate team in football.
So if Justin Fields does end up being the one that hits the trade market, that's going to be like really part of a fascinating offseason for veteran quarterbacks, yeah, right? There's potentially several who could land in the place where they can make a difference right away. You throw in even Kirk Cousins, who's a free agent. There's Russell Wilson, yeah, who it looks like is so far out the door in Denver. I'm in Atlanta, Kevin, and it's pretty clear that this team, among a few others, seems like they are a quarterback away from stepping into an entirely different echelon in the league.
Yeah.
How does the veteran quarterback market shape the landscape moving forward?
Well, it's a little worse than we thought. And what I mean by that is Kirk Cousins is coming off injury. I thought Kirk Cousins was going to have a massive, massive bidding war because all those Shanahan McVay-style coaches love Kirk Cousins. I thought he'd have a robust market. That is going to be dinged a little bit with his injury. Russell Wilson, I don't think he's a franchise changer at this point. I've seen some reports linking him to places like Pittsburgh. I think he's going to be a stopgap starter somewhere. He is not. I mean, like, it turned out he was a very expensive stopgap starter in Denver. They just right. He just forgot to tell the Broncos. But I think Justin Fields going to a place with a good coaching staff that wants to use him, that is excited about coaching Justin Fields, I think that's really encouraging.
So at the end here, there's been so much conversation all year round with the MVP award, which we agree is sewn up right now. But another award that'd be handed out eventually is the Coach of the Year. I'm not asking you to give out the award just yet, unless you want to.
Yeah.
But when you think about the jobs that guys like D'Amico Ryan in Houston, Shane Steichen in Indianapolis, Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland, Mike Tomlin, Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, have all done tremendous this year. What's the coaching performance that has impressed you the most?
This is a great question. When I saw it in the prep, I was worried I'd have to commit, but I will.
Okay.
I think it's Kevin Stefanski.
Okay.
I think sewing up a playoff spot this early with your fourth quarterback this season, they may have played a fifth, is remarkable. And again, it shows you, it's almost the story of the season. If we say this is the year of the backup quarterback, who's more emblematic than the coach who figured out how to win with a quarterback who started the year doing carpool with his kids? I don't know if you saw it, but when they asked Flacco if he could be comeback player of the year, he said, "What did I come back from? I was just hanging out at home." And so I think there's to coach that, to understand what that looks like. I mean, there's a bunch of guys who I thought really overachieved. I thought Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, again, with Jake Browning, is a good example of somebody who really maximized and they didn't get there. I love Sean McVay with the Rams. I think he's absolutely a candidate. He's going to get votes because I think you vote for three people. I love that. But he does have a lot of high-end talent. He still has a healthy Matthew Stafford who's really freaking good. And I think people slept on him because of the injuries over the past couple of years, but that's a little bit different. The other guy I would throw out there is D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah.
Who has done, I mean, you want to talk about doing more with less. That roster is not complete. And they accelerated the timeline, David, by trading for Will Anderson after taking CJ Stroud. And I thought a lot of people were saying, okay, why would they do that? They could control the draft next year. Well, the reason they did that is because they were actually more ready to win than anybody thought. I think that's a testament to D'Amico Ryans. They do have some talent on that roster. They have a better quarterback than Cleveland does because CJ Stroud is a really, really, really good player who we were banding about as a literal MVP candidate in October.
Yeah.
And so Ryans is firmly in that mix. And I would not be surprised if Ryans is one of the great coaches in this league over the next decade.
Kevin Clark, it's been another crazy year. The biggest show in American television, the NFL. You know, we talked about your guarantees earlier. Here's your chance. Guarantee a Super Bowl champion. Go for it.
Wow. Super Bowl is going to be Niners Ravens. Sorry to bore you.
Gotcha.
If I had to pick now, I'd pick the Ravens only because of the shellacking they put on the other week.
Oh, man.
The Ravens are built to stop the Niners.
Oh, man. Now this is that's my pick, man. I'm a little nervous now. But it's all good. Either you've picked right or you've cursed somebody terribly for
exactly
the next couple weeks.
Exactly right.
Either way, we're entertained. Thanks for riding with us throughout the regular season. And of course, we'll be updated as all this stuff happens. We'll see how the pick comes out.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. I'm David Dennis Jr. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow.